on Torp Weekly Edition,
students raising awareness about cancer,
a student-friendly change in the university's alcohol policy,
and kegs, cops, and confiscated beer. All that and more, Torp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Rebecca Goldberg.
And I'm Greg Sussman. When most college students think of cancer, they don't think they could be the one diagnosed. Terp Weekly Edition's Missy Huber tells us about a group of students who want to know that it can happen.
The health fair today is a part of our philanthropy week, which is called CARE Week, and it stands for Cancer Awareness, a Real Effort.
Kappa Phi Gamma president Anjali Bakru knows the importance of raising cancer awareness. Her brother was diagnosed with skin cancer at age 26.
Approximately 70,000 young adults are diagnosed with cancer every year, and that's people our own age, which is pretty astounding. So it's something that I don't think college students are really aware of that is something that's pertinent to their lives. And so that's what we wanted to try to do this week, is just kind of connect to everyone and say that cancer is something that affects people our age and in all manners and forms.
The sorority made care packages for young adult cancer patients in the hospital, hosted a candlelight vigil to commemorate those affected by cancer, and hosted a Mr. Care Week pageant to raise money for the Ullman Cancer Fund.
The Ullman Cancer Fund is a nonprofit that's based out of Columbia, Maryland, that supports young adults with cancer and their family and friends that are affected by their diagnosis as well. We've been around for about 12 years, and we're the leading young adult cancer support organization in the nation.
Lindsay Melvin, the marketing and outreach coordinator for the Ullman Cancer Fund, says the most common cancers they see in young adults are blood cancers, leukemia, and testicular cancer.
It's the leading disease killer in this age group.
It's also the second leading cause of death for our age group. The Ullman Cancer Fund for Young Adults has started a support group on campus for those affected by cancer.
We are really trying to do a good job of getting on the college campuses and making sure everybody's aware and they know that it's a prevalent issue and that we're here to support them if anything were to happen.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Missy Huber.
The Cancer Support Group meets once a month.
On-campus smokers can puff in peace again now that the proposed campus-wide smoking ban has been tossed. The University Senate suggests enforcing existing rules like not smoking within 15 feet of buildings, rather than implementing a campus-wide ban. The issue was first brought to the Senate last year by an undergrad concerned with the health risks associated with secondhand smoke. However, the issue was never voted on.
April is National STD Awareness Month, and the University Health Center is taking it a step further. The center will be launching a series of fun and informative events as part of a national campaign to raise sexual health awareness among college students. Events will begin with a presentation on how to communicate with others about sex, and with a sexual health carnival. This step comes as a response to rising STD rates among young adults. The CDC reports one half of all sexually active people will contract an STD before the age of 25.
Up next, want to know where your confiscated beer goes? We'll tell you just what the cops do with it when we return. Weekly Edition.
The SGA held their very first Multicultural Expo, a 10-day-long event intended to highlight diversity organizations on campus. Despite SGA President Steve Glickman's enthusiasm for the event, many students weren't blown away. Some of the expo's participants even questioned its importance and wondered if it should have taken place regardless.
New revisions in Maryland's diversity plan will shift focus from individual groups of faculty, students, and staff to 7 ideals, some of which include education, leadership, and community. This new direction hopes to expand its reach to the concerns of the community majority. The plans will be open to community feedback and is slated to debut as a draft at the end of May, culminating in a formal proposal by June 8th.
It's well known that drinking is a widely shared activity on college campuses. What you may not know is that the university's alcohol policy was recently changed. The goal is to give students greater amnesty and to encourage them not to wait too long to call for help. Terp Weekly Edition's Mallory Werthammer has more.
Where there are college students, there's bound to be alcohol, and when you mix those two together, there's a relatively high chance of a medical emergency. On April 1st, this is exactly what a university panel was discussing when they reached out to hear from students on the newly adopted Responsible Action Protocol here at the University of Maryland. Most students aren't aware that the protocol exists, and the panel, including Director of Student Conduct John Zacher, are eager to educate the student body and get feedback before the protocol goes before the Senate next fall. I was at the student forum where the protocol was discussed, and a few students anonymously voiced their questions and concerns.
But we need to know sort of how it's working in order to take any next steps.
Alcohol-related conduct at the university is now managed by this protocol, meaning it is not a permanent policy and can be changed from time to time by the director. It also means the way situations are handled can be different on a case-by-case basis, left to the director's discretion. One aspect the policy does consistently push is an alcohol intervention program for most, if not all, cases referred.
What's the alcohol intervention program like? I just feel like that's a pretty serious problem because that could definitely stop people who would have otherwise before this protocol called.
The goal of this is really to educate, to, you know, help people realize the possible consequences of you know, excessive drinking.
Students who are in a room with alcohol, a lot of times if they are calling and helping their friends, they're not being sent to that program.
I think that should definitely be cleared up because an approved alcohol intervention program seems a lot more scary than a 10 to 15 minute online thing.
We're trying to push the educational component of it.
But they definitely can't learn if they're dead.
That's the point of this, actually.
Right, so hopefully you learn that after the first time, right?
But if you continue to provide unlimited protection for these sort of instances, at what point does the student say, well, I'm going to stop drinking or I will stop abusing alcohol because I know that there's no punishment for me?
What are you promoting? Being a coward or having courage?
People are so afraid of the consequences that they look at the situation and say, it's not that bad, they'll be fine.
The purpose is to save lives, and that is the purpose. But there's also a purpose to make sure that students understand what is and is not acceptable. And it's not acceptable for the university to say, you know, we will not punish somebody who habitually abuses alcohol when they know that it's illegal to do so. I mean,
you're going to have to lay some trust in the well-meaning administrators to hear your side of the story and trust you. We are extraordinarily liberal in granting relief under this protocol. We are going to trust your perspective on this 99 times out of 100.
They're like Judge Judy, who can tell by listening to people whether or not they're telling the truth.
There was concern, and there were students who died in the last few years, here and elsewhere, where people did not refer, did not call.
Unfortunately, not everyone can suck it up and do the right thing, and that's kind of where we are with this.
The panel explained some aspects of the protocol, answered student questions, and took their suggestions. But their main purpose was to continue informing students of the changed policy and brainstorm ideas to one day reach the entire campus community. Their main message for students? We want you to call, and this new policy, which we hope you're aware of, should make you feel more comfortable to do that. For TERP Weekly Edition, I'm Mallory Werthamer.
Party's pumping, music's blaring, the gang's all here, and who's at the keg? The cops. How many times do you hear those dreaded sirens on weekends and game days? For some college students, one too many. But what really happens to all that beer that they confiscate? TERP Weekly Edition's Lisa Curcuruto has the story.
And here's what happens next.
They pretty much run away as fast as they can. And they try to get out of trouble, hide their IDs, you know. Throw everything that's on them.
A flock of students run this way and that and end up with the ultimate punishment, confiscated beer. Students can't help but wonder, what do the cops really do with all that beer?
I would say they definitely drink it, take it home.
I'm fairly certain they drink it later. I mean, what else would they do with it?
Well, one, the obvious is that they drink it.
Yeah.
But if they don't drink it, then they make you pour it out.
Students can't help but wonder, what do the cops really do with all that beer?
Well, whenever we confiscate any property from an individual, we have to fill out what's called a property receipt, and then the property is turned over to our logistics officer, who then logs the property as coming in, and then depending on what the property is, in this case beer, it'll eventually be destroyed.
But if it's not you who pours it out, it's them. I spoke to police spokesman Paul Dillon, who said that on a normal football game day, they could have up to 50 cases of beer in the station.
makes me very sad to see it go.
Logistics Officer Kathy Colhane is the one who destroys those thousands of beers.
It's really just a pain in the neck, which makes for a long afternoon when I have to get rid of it.
But kegs, now that's a different story.
Actually, funny story, this cop came to one party and he actually took the beer home. He was like, oh, I have one of those kegs at home. I can use an extra one.
We do keg stands. what we do with the keg is we store them and drain them and then return the empty container.
At the thought of the kicked kegs, students' hearts broke.
Well, it's a crime against humanity.
Someone who's 21. Don't take it. Just give us a warning and leave it.
Like, if they do throw it away, they'll at least recycle it. I try to be green.
But what Officer Colhane does with the cans will make some of you happy.
I mean, I guess I could just throw them in the dumpster, but
yeah,
I'd rather recycle the cans. So.
Students also had ideas to use the beer for fundraising events or to give them to local bars.
If the student did the research and could help us with the process, and I wouldn't knock the idea down right off the bat.
Paul Dillon remembers what it was like back in the old days, but today it's no more.
Well, 25 years ago when I first started here, things were a little different. The procedures and policies were not as strict, but times have changed over the years, and now we're a lot more accountable.
In College Park, I'm Lisa Kirkarudo for Terp Weekly Edition.
Up next, round one of Battle of the Bands at Stamp. Stay tuned to hear who's up to the challenge for a chance to take the stage at Art Attack. University of Maryland is doing what it can to find students jobs to improve the environment. Turt Weekly Edition's Tony Herman attended the Environmental Sustainability Internship Fair to find out just exactly what is being offered.
What do Volvo, Brailsford and Dunleavy, and Kaplan all have in common? They are all making pushes towards sustainability, and they all have opportunities for University of Maryland students. At the Environment and Sustainability Internship Fair last Thursday at the Stamp Student Union, those companies and many more were selling their stuff to a bevy of job-hungry students. Many companies, like Unilever, told me that despite their current economic position, jobs were available at just about every level.
A lot of students are looking for full-time jobs, some are looking for summer internships, some are looking for six-month co-ops. And we can usually find a fit, on any of those opportunities.
UM's Department of Transportation Services was one of several campus departments represented. DOT's representative Shana Smith said that besides offering job opportunities, she wanted to offer students information about how DOTS is going green.
Well, we're really trying to push our alternative transportation services, meaning carpooling, biking, taking our shuttle UMs, taking more public transportation, using the metro, and really decreasing the amount of cars we have on campus.
She said one of her toughest tasks was to eliminate one of the misconceptions about the department.
We're just here to kind of make people aware of that, we're not just about parking, we also have different services available for them.
Students, meanwhile, were just thankful the university was cutting the work for their job-seeking efforts in half.
It's sometimes hard to just get information about companies and the job openings they have.
This gives students an easy opportunity to get an internship, to get a job, without having to jump through all the hoops of actually looking for the internships and jobs on their own. This combines them all into one place, and students can easily access all of them at once.
In College Park, Maryland, I'm Tony Herman, Terp Weekly Edition.
Art Attack is a little under 3 weeks away, and while we all know that Weezer and Ben Folds will headline the event, we don't know who will be the opening act. Terp Weekly Edition's Emily Mechnick went to Battle of the Bands and Stamp to check out the competition.
Students from all across the campus flocked to the Baltimore Room of Stamp for the first round of Battle of the Bands, featuring Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, The Getaways, and Eddie Smotkin. An event presented by Student Entertainment Events, also known as C, these bands, plus four others that will compete on April 14th, are battling to open for Ben Folds and Weezer at Art Attack.
Greg Ormont, lead singer and guitarist for Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, says this show is especially important for his band.
I really hope we win, because if we can play this show, it's the biggest show on our list right now. It would be at Bird Stadium, which is obviously, you always want to play as many people as possible. We played it last year. It was over 2,000 people for us. This year, the set would be twice as long, a half an hour, and we would be opening directly before Ben Folds and then Weezer. That would be the only three people on the bill.
However, his band encountered a huge dilemma.
Our bassist was not allowed to play, so it was just the three of us who had to pick up the slack. He got kicked out of the show 1 minute before we went on, and it was up to us to make up for that.
Well, we're missing the ping to our pong. Ben, our bassist, couldn't be here, but we're just playing ping pong. Happy to be here, and I hope you enjoy.
I think that Pigeons Playing Ping Pong is the best. I just really like their vibes, and they really have a good feel. And
after Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, the Getaways from Columbia, Maryland were up next. Last to battle was 23-year-old hip-hop artist Eddie Smotkin.
Feeling kind of perfect, only thing can make the night brighter. I'll smoke with anyone unless they got a white lighter. I drink the spirits and feel it in my soul when I feel like, I feel like.
I think that Eddie Smotkin and the Getaways are really good, but I think Pigeons Playing Ping Pong would be best suited for Art Attack.
How do the panel of judges from C decide?
The bands are being judged by quality, uniqueness, technical ability to perform, crowd interaction, general appeal, and adherence to a time period of 15 minutes.
Minutes before the winner for this round was announced, Pigeons Playing Ping Pong was afraid their missing bassist would hurt their chances of winning.
Well, we're super nervous about it. Normally, we're quite confident.
How do you feel now,
Ewan? A little confused, but I mean, I guess we had a good show, and we put a lot of effort into it despite our inconvenience. And, they saw that, so I'm happy.
The second round will host four more bands, where one winner will be chosen from that round. The three finalist bands, two preliminary battle winners, and one online poll winner, will compete in the final round on Wednesday, April 21st. At the Stamp Student Union, I'm Emily Mechnick reporting for Terp Weekly Edition.
That'll do it for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Greg Sussman.
And I'm Rebecca Goldberg. We'll be back next week with more news from in and around College Park. And don't forget, you can take us with you. You can find our podcast at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.